changed his clothes and shined his boots and combed his dark hair down. And his mother cried as he walked out, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He laughed and kissed his mom and said, "You're Billy Joe's a man. I can shoot."
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Joshua Horwitz, who is the Executive Director of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. He is currently a visiting scholar at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the co-author of Guns, Democracy, and the Insurrectionist Idea. He has spent nearly two decades working on gun violence prevention issues. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joshua Horwitz.
Ian, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And this is clearly a critical week on Capitol Hill, particularly in the Senate. And both the president speaking on Monday in Connecticut very, very powerfully, very emotionally. Today, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid giving another impassioned plea to Republicans to let a vote go forth and give up on their filibuster threats. Harry Reid, in fact, talked about how his father committed suicide. Very, very powerful speech. So we've heard the rhetoric. What about the reality here?
Well, you know, this is a very fluid situation, and it's hard to exactly know how it's all going to turn out. But as days go, we had a pretty good day today. The procedure in the Senate is pretty arcane, but to move things in the Senate, you need 60 votes, and to start debate, you need to have a motion to proceed. And unless you get every senator to say, "Yep, let's proceed," call a unanimous consent, you have to get 60 votes to move that legislation. And one of the reasons it's hard to do anything in the Senate is because you always need 60 votes.
So, well, by the way, you never used to need 60 votes. You only need this under Mitch McConnell.
Well, I mean, 60 votes is always the way the Senate's worked.
Oh, I see.
But it wasn't invoked on a routine basis. I mean, people agreed, and you had a lot more unanimous consent. Let's get to the legislation, and then we can fight it out. Now it's even, can you get to the legislation?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Ted Cruz from Texas and Rand Paul from Kentucky and Mike Lee from Utah had said, you know, we are not going to give unanimous consent, and we're going to have what they call the talking filibuster. They're going to get to the Senate floor and take up all the time between now and what they call it when this petition ripens to go forward. You have to give 30 hours of debate or so to allow this thing to go forward before you're even allowed to get 60 votes. Well, they threatened and they sent a letter, and Mitch McConnell joined them, and then all of a sudden came out this afternoon that they were not going to actually talk on the Senate floor during this time, that they were going to back down, and they were going to then let the 60 vote go forward without sort of all the rhetoric that goes before it. And then we found out later this afternoon that it turns out a bunch of their Republican colleagues were not going to join in trying to stop this the package of bills going to the floor. And so, you know, we are expecting a vote on Thursday on what's called the motion to proceed to actually get to the bill. And at this moment, we're cautiously optimistic that we have the 60 votes to proceed to a discussion. That doesn't mean we have 60 votes on any one provision. That just means that we'll have a discussion. Things could change tomorrow. But I think the sort of unrelenting pressure of all the advocacy groups and, of course, the Newtown survivors' visit to the Hill and their appearance on 60 Minutes, and, frankly, people's support from all over the country on things like universal background checks has made this Republican, this threatened a filibuster and their attempt to prevent this from going to the floor pretty politically unpalatable, and that sort of played out today.
So, Joshua Horwitz, but when you say the bills are going to proceed on Thursday, presumably, what bills? I mean, McConnell said that he won't touch Harry Reid's bill. It seems like the Pat Toomey bill is the one that has the best chance, right?
Well, there is no Pat Toomey bill yet.
Uh-huh.
So what we have right now, what we call the base bill, is Senator Schumer's package on background checks, universal background checks, which is a good bill, very strong. We have a trafficking bill from Senator Gillibrand and a couple other folks that would make it a crime to illegally traffic firearms. It's hard to believe, but it's not really a crime yet. to do that, and then Senator Boxer's school safety bill. That's in the base. That's in the base package. And there, you know, there was a feeling that, well, that package couldn't get those 60 votes, so they were going to have a compromise. Well, all of a sudden, it looks like that base package could get 60 votes. Now, what will happen, though, is that there's going to have to be, if we get to the Senate floor, there'll be amendments. Senator Manchin and Senator Toomey have been working on some type of compromise bill, which I don't know the, I don't know all the, what the language is yet, and we don't know if we'll even get a bill, but it would be something that is somewhat less than universal background checks, potentially maybe all commercial sales, things like that, maybe over the internet, gun shows. We just don't know all the details. We'll have to study that. But what we assume is that when we get to the bill on Thursday, if there's a compromise, that will be offered as an amendment. Alternatively, Reid could incorporate that into what's called in the base bill and then have to refile, and our debate would start on Monday. But right now, we think the debate, motion to proceed on Thursday, get to the bill, and then have the Toomey, Manchin Toomey compromise offered. And I don't want to comment too much on that because I just don't know what's going to be in there. My feeling is we have an excellent bill in Schumer's background check bill. We should vote on that. I think it would be very politically unpopular to do otherwise, and I really believe the American people are ready for comprehensive background checks. It's, you know, 90% of Americans all over the country want this. It's time to get it done.
So it does, though, Joshua Horwich, does the Schumer bill, is it really the lockdown in terms of closing the gun show loopholes and having a real background check? Because it seems to me the opponents, obviously in many ways prompted by the NRA, have this sort of paranoia about the idea of a national database. And as you know, they've hobbled the ATF over the sure. decades based upon this idea that big government is going to pry into the lives of law-abiding Second Amendment gun owners. So and basically by taking that stance, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you've got to have some kind of database, and you should have a database that law enforcement shares with. I've talked to ATF officers to say they can't even share data on crime guns, which have blood on them. People have already been killed in a crime, and yet they can't share that data with other law enforcement agencies.
Right. Senator Schumer's bill does what you do now. When you go to a gun store, the gun dealer does a background check, and what his bill would require would be that almost all sales would have to go through a gun dealer, and the gun dealer does what they do right now. So the paranoia is like, you know, it's the black helicopter, and it goes right up there with black helicopters and FEMA internment camps and things like that, right? It's really paranoia, and it's just a huge red herring. Let me tell you, I'm going to try to explain this to your readers, your listeners, the way this works. Right now, when you go to a gun dealer, you get a background check, and the record of who you are and your address stays with the gun dealer on a paper record. It's probably not the optimal way to do it, but that's the way it's done right now. So there's no way that's not a government database, because there's 50,000 gun dealers and they have paper records all over the country. And people are trying to say that's going to be a database. That's not. That's what we have now. The other side of the record keeping has to do with ATF. And when you do a background check, it actually has to do with FBI. The FBI National Instant Check System, NICS, is queried. And your name gets sent to NICS and says, are there any disqualifying prohibitions, whether a mental health issue, whether it's a felony issue or something like that. That record is destroyed in 24 hours. Under Schumer's bill, that system still applies, which is your paper record stays with the gun dealer, and the record of the check at the federal government gets destroyed in 24 hours. That's the way it's been since the beginning of the Brady campaign. It's prevented. There's no, you can't, under federal law, you can't have a federal gun registry. So there's two sides of those records. Neither of them have any possibility of turning into a government database. So literally, this whole thing is just pure paranoia conspiracy.
But in terms of NICS, is there anything in this bill that is going to strengthen its ability to screen out people like the Lanza kid in Newtown, who clearly had mental problems, the fellow in Colorado. I mean, you know, parents don't want it, and Loeffner, by the way, in in Arizona. His parents knew that he was acting in a very, very dangerous way. They took away his car keys. The problem seems to be that, you know, parents don't want to turn their kids in. So isn't that the real flaw in the system here?
Well, first of all, the Schumer bill expands the current system to almost all gun sales. What it doesn't do is doesn't change the categories of who's getting into the system, okay? And I think you have to be somewhat careful with that because you don't want to put anybody with a mental illness into the National Instant Check system because the vast majority of people with mental illness will never be violent. So what you need to do is you need to use right now the prohibited category is someone who's involuntarily committed. And what we need to do is we need to make sure that people like Loeffner, people like James Holmes in Aurora, I have no idea why James Holmes' psychiatrist did not commit or try to get James Holmes committed. But that's the process you need to do, and we need to make sure that all those commitment records are in the system. That's really part of the problem is that the states aren't reporting that. We need to make that happen. Now, Adam Lanza. We don't know, you know, whether he should have been prohibited or not is hard to know. I know that he shouldn't have had access to a Bushmaster AR-15, and I know that he shouldn't have access to high-capacity magazines. But as far as his mental status, we don't know that yet, so I don't want to generalize. But what we do need to know that people who are dangerous because of mental illness should be committed under the laws that we have now and under psychiatric supervision and put into and the NICS system should be able to make sure that all those records are included. That's the way to do this, not to sort of randomly say people with mental illness should be prohibited. You have to have some type of process, and it's tricky, but it can be done, and it can be done effectively in states like your state in California have done it very well.
Again, I'm speaking with Joshua Horwitz, who's the executive director of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. He's currently a visiting scholar at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the co-author of Guns, Democracy, and the Insurrectionist Idea. He has spent nearly two decades working on gun violence prevention issues. So given that you're at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, obviously that leads me to bring up Mayor Bloomberg, who's threatening and will deliver on his threats to put some serious money into this upcoming election in terms of people who vote against this bill try and level the playing field because the NRA put up $25 million in the last election. Is that possibility on the part of Mayor Bloomberg, is that perhaps what changed what happened? At the very beginning, you pointed out that didn't look very good. It looked like Rand Paul and Rubio and Lee and Ted Cruz were going to make good on their threats to filibuster. Clearly, the Republican elders talked to them and said, you know, we're going to look bad next year's elections, is Bloomberg's threat to level the playing field in terms of television advertising, is that a part of the mix?
Well, look, I think, you know, Mayor Bloomberg's efforts through Mayors Against Illegal Guns, combined with Mayor Menino and all the other mayors over, I think, close to 900 mayors now, have made a huge difference. I've been doing this for over two decades, and obviously having the mayors, just because of who they are and the influence they wield, but also having the resources that Mayor Bloomberg does, has changed this debate, in my perspective, positive ways. In that, you know, we can match the NRA politically dollar for dollar, and that's a very important development. So it used to be that if you voted, against the NRA, you know, you were not going to have. The big threat from the NRA is we're going to spend all this money against you. Now, if you vote the wrong way, in my perspective, you still might have a lot of money spent against you. And the NRA's PAC last year was probably the most inefficient PAC out there. It had the least return on investment, under 1%, where Mayor Bloomberg did pretty well. He actually knocked off a number of NRA A-rated candidates. And I think, you know, the changing demographics in this country only portend well for our issue, and when people get educated about, you know, folks trying to block the simple things like background checks. You get, you know, I think you, and you have the amount, the money to get those issues out there. It goes poorly against candidates who don't support what we call common sense gun violence prevention.
So in terms of other aspects of the Schumer bill, given that you feel that that has the best chance of proceeding, Joshua Horwitz, we know, of course, that the you mentioned Lanza's Bushmaster AR-15 assault rifle. There's no ban on that because Feinstein's bill wasn't even taken up by the Senate. But what about?
Well, no, I would expect that bill to come up as an amendment.
I see.
I would definitely expect that bill to come up as an amendment.
But what about the issue of magazines and capacity?
Well, I know that Harry Reid has said that he will allow people to vote on all these things, and I take him at his word. I think that there will be an opportunity to bring up assault weapons and magazine capacity. I think the issue is once you get the 60 votes to get to the floor, how does the amendment process break down? How many amendments do you have? And for, you know, how many bad amendments do you have to put on the floor to get these good ones? So it'll be a complicated issue. But my expectations is that we will have votes on both of those amendments, you know, if and when we get to the floor.
And in terms of what happened in the state of Connecticut with the new state law, is there any chance of anything being modeled on that? I mean,
a lot of what they did in Connecticut was modeled on what you've done what people have done in California. California has really done, you know, has really been out front on a lot of these laws, and I think to very good effect. So you have a what's called a one feature assault and ban test bill now in Connecticut, modeled after California. They had a weaker ban in place, which allowed this weapon to come in. Bushmaster thoughtfully makes something called state-compliant weapons so that they can try to sneak in under what's called a two-feature test. California's test is a one-feature test, which means one indicia of assault weapons. So, for instance, a pistol grip and a semi-automatic rifle or pistol with a pistol grip and a high-capacity magazine, ability to accept high-capacity means qualifies in California as an assault weapon, and that's what Connecticut did. They also are requiring background checks on all sales, and with almost no exceptions. And those are the types of things that we think will make communities a lot safer. And if you look at the data, you'll see that the safest states in terms of gun violence have those types of laws, have background checks, and the states that are most dangerous don't.
But this raises the question of, for example, in California, people who want an assault rifle can just go to Arizona or Nevada. And I think it's happening in Connecticut with this new law. People could go to New Hampshire, for example. Isn't that the problem, that you have this patchwork, and will federal law, if they pass a decent bill, that presumably, does that trump all these state laws?
Well, first of all, you can't legally go to – someone from California who lives in California can't legally go to Nevada and buy an assault weapon. So it's a crime, and of course, part of that is to prosecute those things. So, you know, we think that obviously is an important deterrent. But what federal law does in the gun violence prevention arena is create the floor. So what federal law is, all the states must do. Now, some states can go beyond that. So, for instance – even though under federal law you're not required to do background checks at gun shows right now, California has gone beyond that and does those types of background checks. So federal law creates that floor, and it creates the playing field that all states have to at least comply with. And so we think, you know, we'd like to see these procedures of federal law, because if you want to stop trafficking, if you want to stop guns going to criminals, you need to have at least the universal base of what people are doing, so that they don't go to states where it's easy to get firearms and traffic them into states that it's harder to get. And that's the case today. And so we think it's important to have at least the federal floor, the federal or universal policy that all states must follow.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here, Joshua Horwitz. I'm glad we were able to get this briefing on where we stand, because it's not being clear. And it looks overall that something positive may happen.
It may. I mean, every day brings some other twist. But today was a good day, and today was a day that we're moving forward, and that means it was a good day for the American people.
Well, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you.
Joshua Horowitz is the Executive Director of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. He is currently a visiting scholar at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the co-author of Guns, Democracy, and the Insurrectionist Idea. He has spent nearly two decades working on gun violence prevention issues. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about progressive backlash to the chained CPI and the delivery of a petition to the White House today of 2.3 million signatures.
Anyway, you do.